Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. My next guest comes to you from Central Alberta. She's a mobile crane operator working in the oil and gas industry. In her free time, she enjoys all mountain access on her sled, as well as hard enduro free rides on her Husky 300. She's recently engaged and trying to plan the perfect wedding in the times of COVID. Without further ado, coming up next, this is Gloria Veron.
So it's nice to see you again. It's a little less weird now that we sort of like communicated.
I feel like I know who you are now.
Weird random dude. Getting in touch with you on the internet, asking to be on a podcast.
Hey, do you podcast?
So how have you been? You finished off your riding season pretty good.
Yeah, well, I did. Yes and no. I had a great sled season. It's over for me now because I have a blown engine on my sled, which is not the best way to end the season, but that's okay. It's part of it. It happens. So sled is in the shop right now, and I just figured that's probably my sign to end the season strong.
Yeah.
And there's still lots of good riding right now, but you know what? I think it's my sign. And dirt bike season is starting. So I pulled out the bikes last week and getting ready for that.
Oh, nice. Are you going to try racing this year if it's allowed?
I will. Yeah, if it's allowed. I did check the race schedule with my work schedule. I work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I miss a lot of the races. And also my wedding is, there's a race around my wedding as well. So I guess I'll probably prioritize the wedding this time. I will attend the ones I can, and yeah, like it's just hard to commit to a full race season with my job, but I just don't have weekends off. But
yeah, for most of us, that's the way it is. Like you know, you get to go to some and you don't get to go, and there's those kids hit every single one. They never do very well, but they end up being class champions
because they showed.
Yeah, that's right. They have the points.
That's all it takes, just to show.
Yeah, it literally is. Half the success is showing up.
100%. Yeah. I always say that actually at work. I'm like, when people don't show up to work, I'm like, literally, that is the hardest part of your day, is just showing up. Once you're there, you're good. You're in.
Yeah, that is it. Like getting out of bed, go to my job sucks. But, you know, after that, once, you know, coffee's flowing and all that stuff, everything, it pans out.
And, I mean, it pays for the bikes and stuff. So yeah. Do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I will definitely be racing with the Rocky Club this year. I think I'm just going to probably just try and hit those races and not try to commit to anything else. Just because it's a really busy summer with the wedding stuff and work. And then, you know, then pretty much every other weekend would be a race and then some fun riding, obviously. So,
yeah. Well, if you're the right friends, everything's a race anyway, so it doesn't matter.
This is very true.
Okay, yeah. So you bring up the wedding. You want to tell everybody the story of how the engagement took place?
Yeah, well, Tristan, my fiance, he sleds and dirt bikes as well, which is fantastic, obviously. And we were riding last year, March, sledding in this sweet zone, McRae, south of Revelstoke. It was actually my first time riding there, and beautiful bluebird day, and I mean, just thought it was another great day of riding. We get up pretty much to the peak of McRae, and a friend of ours, Elisa, you guys might know her as Sled Revelstoke on Instagram. She was riding with us. She often carries her camera while riding, so I didn't think much of it. But she's like, yeah, I got my camera. Like, this is such a great spot. Should I get a picture of you two? And I'm like, okay, like, sure, why not, right? I'm always down. And Tristan was like, yeah, okay. I'm like, what is wrong with him? Like, he's normally like, no, like no pictures. I'm good. But he was down for the picture. I'm like, all right. Like, I mean, I'll take this opportunity. So he takes his backpack off, his Avi pack, which is out of the ordinary. He normally always leaves it on. Like, we only carry like essentials in there that, you know, you only need in an emergency usually. But he took up his backpack off. I didn't think much of it at the time. Hindsight, it all makes sense. The ring was in there. and we posed for the picture, and before you know it, he's down on one knee, and I blacked out for about a minute. I'm not even sure if I said yes, but I think so. I got the ring, so pretty sure I said yes. But no, it was a pretty amazing moment, just Bluebird Day on top of a mountain at the edge of a cliff when he, after I got, I do remember getting it back up and like jumping up to hug him, almost pushing him off the edge of the cliff that was 5 feet behind him. But all went well. So that was a pretty amazing moment.
Oh, sweet. And mm-hmm. and I'm sure he's pretty happy you said yes, especially with the witness.
Yeah, he was pretty nervous all day. And I didn't notice, like, I didn't notice him being off. The only weird thing was this was the start of coronavirus last year. And it was right when people were things were starting to shut down. People were starting to, like, say, like, oh, should we even go sledding anymore? Like, we're not supposed to travel. And he was so adamant on going on this trip. And I was like, yeah, I'm totally down. Like, I want to ride too. And he's like, no, we have to. Like, it might be our last trip this year. We got to go. I'm like, no, I'm with you. Like, let's go. Let's go. He was so adamant because he had planned with Elisa to have her come with us sledding that day. And yeah, so he had it all planned out and he did great. So
that's awesome. Pandemic proposal. Yeah. Yep. Well, it's tough, like, lining everything up and having it be perfect for the you know, the memory, I guess, and yeah. not tipping your hand before it's too late. Like, if it's too obviously cheesy up front, the girl's going to know what's up.
Exactly. He did such a good job. And he kept saying, like, he basically gave me zero hints. I had no idea it was coming. So it was perfect. He did good.
When we spoke before, you told me about how you are a mobile crane operator.
Yes.
And I've retold this to a few people. And I guess nobody outside of the industry even knows what that is.
Oh, yeah, I know. Everybody, when I tell them I'm a crane operator, they're like, oh, so, like, are you scared of heights? Because you got to go way up there. Like, they're thinking tower cranes.
Yeah.
I totally understand, because when you, like, that's just, like, mainstream. Everybody thinks of a tower crane when they think of a crane. But mobile cranes are cranes, like, you can drive down the highway, you drive to a location, set them up, and do the job, tear them down, drive back to the shop, basically. And a lot of, like, the bigger cranes might take a few truckloads of parts to build counterweight and stuff. But, yeah, you're pretty, like, you're 6 to 8 feet off the ground. It's not very high, not very scary.
No, but you are isolated. You're stuck in it all day.
Yeah, for sure. It really depends on kind of the job you're at, like how much you're interacting with the crews and how much they need your help. it's a super rewarding job. I've been a journeyman been a crane operator for 8 years, journeyman for 5. And it's honestly been such a rewarding career. I just really enjoy it. It's a very mentally challenging. Setting up your crane is crucial to whether you can even do the job, whether you can reach what you need to reach, or like, yeah, it's extremely rewarding, and I really enjoy it.
So I guess it'd be a real pain if you had to move. Like, what's set up and tear down for a crane take?
It depends on the crane, but I mean, it can be like just a quick short move. If you don't need to remove any counterweight, you can just like crawl forward with all that weight stacked on you. So then, yeah, it's like maybe like half an hour to move. But if you've got to like tear a crane apart completely and rebuild it, like it's a couple hour job. So setting it properly, like measuring things out is very important. Making sure you check your charts, making sure you can have the capacity at your radius and stuff is really important. So you kind of want to measure twice, cut once kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess so. Eh? Mm-hmm. And how did you become a crane operator? Like it seems sort of out of the blue and kind of strange for a lady to become a crane operator.
It is a bit strange, I guess. I honestly, like most people, I had no idea crane operators even existed. I didn't know it was a trade. It's a 3-year apprenticeship. But my ex-boyfriend was a crane operator, and at the time I was a bookkeeper, and I was miserable, like miserable. I hated being in the same office every day. I didn't have a window, so I didn't know what the weather was like, and I'm, as you know, I'm like sledding and dirt biking. I'm outdoorsy. I'm a farm kid. So being in the office all day, repetitive, like every month, the same stuff, like it was just killing me. So anyway, he suggested, he's like, why don't you sign up for your apprenticeship and do this? Like, I think you'd like it because it's like a little bit physical. You're outside, but at the same time, you have climate controlled cab on, you know, really cold days, really hot days. And it's mentally challenging. It's not extremely physically challenging, but there are days you're on your feet a lot. So it's just a good variety. So, you know, I was like, yeah, what the heck? Why not? So I signed up for my apprenticeship. A friend got me my first job. He put his name on the line for me. I guess they were like, is this girl going to be like super wimpy? And he's like, no, like, I swear she'll be good. Like, and thank God for him. That friend Dallas, he got me hooked up with my first job, and yeah, the rest is history. So it takes a while to, like any industry, I guess, to kind of get your name known, and that like people are like willing to take a chance on hiring you, kind of thing. But I feel fairly established now after 8 years. Yeah.
I guess it would be a reputation kind of job. They don't want to have machine operators who are kind of slow or lazy.
So yeah.
Yeah. Inefficient. Yeah,
sure.
Especially when they pay by the hour.
And I mean, there's a few different types of jobs out there. Like there's some jobs where you stay on the same site all the time. And then there's jobs where you're like job to job, different locations all the time. And you've got to be a pretty hardworking, ambitious, like quick moving person for those kind of jobs. So yeah, I'm like, word of mouth and like your reputation is huge, like any career, I guess. But
yeah,
really, I took the leap for sure.
Well, with just under a decade of experience, what's the most interesting location or move you've had to make? Like, have you ever had to move anything super fragile and expensive?
I've done this, like, I don't even actually know exactly what it was, but it was some little radioactive box I had to put up on like a roof. I don't know what it was. They didn't really tell me, but they told me it was radioactive. So I'm like, okay, well, let's try not to smash anything. And I've put our hot tub in our backyard. So that was kind of cool.
That is cool.
To be able to set up and be like, oh yeah, don't worry, honey, I got this. Set the hot tub in the backyard. The neighbors were like, what is going on over there? Yeah, I've set up like bleachers inside arenas for like rodeos and stuff. Like just like little jobs like that are kind of different and unique and fun. So
yeah, those would be the ones, eh?
Well, also lifted a rock. Someone wanted a rock moved and it was like 30,000 pounds. So it was also interesting.
That's crazy. How'd you get into sleds or off-road sports altogether?
Well, like I mentioned, I'm a farm kid. I grew up in the country and great way to be raised, but my parents are not motorsports people whatsoever. Like they're lucky if their vehicle gets an oil change at the right time. So, which is bad for farmers, right? We had a quad, that's it. Like we were not sledders, dirt bikers, nothing. But lots of the neighbor kids had quads and dirt bikes and I just thought it was the coolest thing. And I would always just like sit there looking out the window, watching them go by because they always would go for a group ride every Sunday and I'd watch all the neighbor kids go by on Sundays. And I'm like, man, like that'd be so cool. But I'm the oldest child. And so like being a girl, the oldest child, like there's no way I was getting like a dirt bike or anything like that. So when I turned 21, I kind of got introduced into dirt bikes and sleds. And like first time I ever rode a dirt bike was a little 85. I had no idea how to even start it, like kickstart, no nothing. And I was like ripping around this little 85. I'm like, this is awesome. So I bought a CRF 230 shortly after that, which is a great little tractor. And then also got a Polaris 600. It was, I think it was a 2010 sled that year too. So I kind of dove ahead first in like sledding and dirt biking in the same year. And so, yeah, I think I was 20 or 21. I think it was 21 at that time. And oh man, like obviously I haven't looked back. I've just progressed in both sports and I don't ever want to give up both. But it was definitely hard getting into it as an adult, I would say. Like I wish I started as a kid or a teenager because you have like more fear as an adult. You have like, you're like, well, if I break my arm, I can't go to work. And then I have bills to pay now. So that sucks. And like, kids shake off pain so quickly. Like they like smash their body on the ground and they get up and they're like, oh, that hurt, but I think I'm okay. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a year of physio. Like, no.
Oh, try doing it at my age. I mean, since we first sort of met virtually, I've been following your Instagram and you find some really amazing spots to play in the snow. Do you have any sort of secret spots that you feel like only you and a handful of people know the location of and never share?
There's a few places that people just avoid because the trails aren't groomed. So like we primarily ride in Revelstoke. It's just our favorite. It's just, in my opinion, nothing compares. And Boulder and Frisbee are your big riding areas out there. And understandably so, like the club does a great job at grooming the trails. They have awesome cabins there. Like everyone can hang out. Yeah. So, but there's a few places that are not groomed that we love to go to. It's a little bit of work to get into, but so worth it because you'll be riding in zero tracks all day. Every year that goes on, like we meet people or locals who are willing to like show us kind of like the back way in somewhere or like a zone that most people don't really check out. And also just with years of riding, just exploring the zones a bit deeper and further and like finding areas that most people are just kind of not even venturing to. So we always seem to be able to find untouched, it's been a really good year for that, actually. Like, even though it was pretty weak year for snow, like, we didn't get as much snow as last year for sure. We always managed to find untouched powder. It was a good year.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I noticed is in a lot of the images, you guys are doing first tracks. Like, yeah, it's not a big tracked out bowl or anything like that. So that's why I wondered if you had some special space you aren't sharing.
They want to know, they can come ride with me.
Yeah, there you go. Keep up and you can find out. So you go to a lot of these backcountry spaces that are clearly not managed. Have you ever been in an avalanche or anything like that?
No, thankfully that hasn't happened. We do take a lot of precautions, of course. Like you're going into the backcountry and it's powerful and dangerous for sure. So firstly, we always make sure to check AVI conditions. There's definitely been days where we've chosen to go to like a more mellowed zone because of the AVI conditions. Like we wanted to go check out this area, but we knew there was AVI chutes we had to cross, or it was like, you know, a bit of a more sketchy area to go into. So we definitely choose where we're riding based on AVI conditions. And then, once we choose like the most safest zone possible for the day, we'll make sure we have all our gear, beacon, shovel, probe, of course, is your basics. Make sure everyone's beacons are on before you leave the trucks. And now for a couple of years, I've been riding with an AVI bag too, which is just an added safety in case you are in an avalanche, right? A lot of people struggle to justify the cost. I get it. It's like, it's expensive. It's like $1,500 for an AVI pack. But the way a friend told me about to look at it was, is your life worth $1,500? And if you look at it that way, it's a pretty easy decision to go buy an AVI pack if you're a regular backcountry rider, right? Very worth it. And then we also carry like a Garmin InReach. If there is an emergency, we have communication to get help quickly. We've been pretty lucky. But it's based because of our decisions that we haven't been in avalanche or anything like that, or any major emergency situation. So,
yeah, that's fair. That's just like my wife's friend was in an avalanche, and she said like for 2 years after, she's still having dreams of being in sort of the washing machine effect, you know, because it just rolled her and a bunch of people. It was near Revy. It was a big event. I can't recall all the details at the moment, but yeah, just like even surviving can be traumatic. Like living through it can be traumatic. So I hope you never get to experience it. That's for sure.
No kidding. No, it's extremely traumatic. Like there's almost nothing you can do once you're in one. Like it's so powerful. I just listened to a podcast the other day of a gentleman whose wife died in an avalanche while they were backcountry skiing. And it just was like all heart wrenching, just listening to him talk about it. Like it's such a dangerous thing. You've really got to know your shit when you're going to the backcountry for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I guess another question would be faith in your machine. Like, how well maintained is your sled that you trusted to go mountain range back? Like,
yeah, like that's for sure. Like, and so when people are like, oh, you don't need a new sled. Like, I agree, you don't need a new sled, but you need, I'd suggest a newer, reliable sled. Yep. And that you are good about your maintenance and, you know, you go through your sled before every ride because you don't want to be stranded in the backcountry.
Yes.
Like that's either you're doubling out and leaving your sled or getting a helicopter or like it's, yeah, you need a reliable machine for sure. We actually, my fiance's chain case broke January or February, I think it was. We weren't too far back, but we were able to tow it out, but it took us 4 hours to tow it out. And like that was just a fluke thing. Like there's nothing he could have done to prevent it. But yeah, it sucks when something happens for sure.
Oh, no doubt. It's not like dirt biking. Like, if I go dirt biking and my bike breaks down, the worst thing I'm going to have to do is boot ski down some scree or whatever, but I'll be able to walk back the way I came. Like,
yeah,
God forbid, but like doing it in waist deep powder, like you're just stranded now.
Yeah. Like you're not walking out. No. That's for sure. And also it's good to be riding with people you trust. If you're going back into like deep into zones and zones, especially you're not like super familiar with, like being with riders who are strong is important on those days that you're exploring and going really far back. Like if something were to happen, they could double you out or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the biggest mistake you think novice riders make?
I think it goes back to avalanche safety. I think novice riders don't realize the severity of avalanches. And I don't like, especially when you're having like a great day, you just start ripping around. Like you're not thinking about that,
no.
But you've got to be like assessing the terrain that you're in and reading it. And I think it comes with time, but also doing an avalanche course. I highly recommend everyone does it. Like if you're going to be spending any time back there, I highly recommend taking an avalanche course. I'd say that's a number one thing. And then number two is probably not dressing appropriately. Either they're dressed way too warm, like they're sweating by the time you get like down the trail, and then you get cold, right? Or not dressed warm enough. And what, like no matter how good your gloves are, they're going to get wet. So bringing a couple pairs of gloves. Super important too, but no, dressing properly, dressing in layers is a big mistake I see a lot too.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'm asking because thinking about all the pandemic rental sports, you know, and sledding is something that you can just go rent a sled and bomb off behind the mountains there.
Yeah.
I don't know if people give it all the thought that they should, but for me I would prepare for it as if I was going on a multi-day ski trip, changes of clothes and stuff, just because I sweat like a crazy person dirt biking. So what would be different on the sled?
Same. Probably the same. Yeah, no, that does like freak me out too. Like sometimes you can see them on the mountain. Like if we hit Boulder or Frisbee, you'll see them there because that's usually where they'll ride.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, good. Hopefully you don't go too far back. Like I am like uber prepared, like change of clothes, like emergency equipment, extra food, extra water, like probably way too much crap. But like if you had to stay the night, man, you'd be grateful you had all that stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I have these little like coconut bars. Basically it's like a little brick of them. And I carry them when I'm hunting or riding because it's like 3 days worth of food if you get stuck in the backcountry and it doesn't weigh that much. Like, it tastes horrible. It's just coconut, right? But it's like super high energy. And
yeah.
I'll carry them till they go rancid. Get new ones, right? I hope I never have to eat them. But it's
absolutely
wonderful if I have them. Like,
clearly you've tried it though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Open them up and give them a shot. Just like, well, yeah, maybe they will taste awesome when you're starving. But if you have other food options, they're definitely not it. But they're on Amazon. They're in a little blue box or a little blue bag. And I don't recommend them.
Well, it's incentive not to get stuck out there.
That's right. Like, because this is what I have to rely on. I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's just such a big difference too, between dirt biking and sledding with like getting stranded. If you're, you have to stay the night on the mountain when you're sledding, it's cold. Like, you're going to be cold and wet. Even if you build a fire and like a shelter, you're still going to be cold and wet.
Yeah.
Like on the bike. Like, yeah, I definitely carry emergency equipment, but it's not as crucial because it's not that cold at night. You're going to be able to survive with a fire. You'll be nice and toasty, right?
Yeah. 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 There's no elements changing. Like,
yeah.
Okay, fair enough. We can dirt bike to the top of mountains and experience a lot of the same conditions, but by and large, you know, we're not expecting a snow squall.
You know? Yeah, well, not generally.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be more concerned about a grizzly actually on the bike for sure. So,
but I've never thought of dirt biking as something that would have a survival component. Like, yeah, the way I could see sledding having a survival moment. On to dirt biking, there's a race that you take part in. It's like a women's event out in BC.
Yeah. The Triple B Rally. That's been a huge part of my life, like getting into dirt biking and meeting other women. Back when Instagram was kind of new and I just kind of got on Instagram, I had just started riding and I'd only ever ridden with guys. I knew of a couple girls who rode, but I've never ridden with them at that point. This was probably, I don't know. How many years? A lot of years ago. And I came across this event, Triple B Rally in Revelstoke. And I had been to Revelstoke for sledding, and I thought it was the greatest place ever. Still do. And I figured, you know, like, why not go? Maybe I'll meet some people. Like, I'm super nervous because I feel like I suck at riding. But you know what? Like, let's do it. Whatever. I don't know any girls that ride. So, headed out there. It's located at the Glacier House, which is so awesome because you can ride right from the Glacier House to the trails that Revelstoke, the Revy riders have made. And went there, met all these amazing women from Alberta and BC, like women from all over the place, super welcoming, like, all levels, like brand new riders. There was a girl who bought her bike the day before and had never ridden before. And like expert, awesome. What's that?
What's her name? Gloria? No, I'm just kidding.
No. So I wasn't like the newest. I went and met some of my best friends that I have now through that event. And I've gone back a few times to it. They didn't have it last year due to COVID. But hopefully this year it's not looking good again, but who knows. It was just so empowering to see all these other women. Like, I remember just being so nervous to unload my bike by myself and then seeing like a parking lot full of women doing it. I'm like, oh, like this is awesome. Like, they're badass. They're doing this. I can do this. And just confident women riding alone without a man there. Like, I know it's such a simple concept to me, but at the time when it just was overwhelming, like I had barely known how to ride a bike, let alone travel like to another province, unload, load, you know, do everything on my own. And like, yeah, it was very empowering for sure. And also like gave a lot of confidence because if they were able to carry tools and be confident, if something broke, they could fix it. Like, I could do that too. And just sometimes just seeing someone else do it is all you need, right?
Yeah. I remember I had similar feelings the first time I arrived at a spot that was like packed out with all the bikes and trucks and stuff, just being like, oh shit, I'm in the wrong spot or I don't belong. And then, you know, you sheepishly unload your bike, hope you don't drop it off the ramp or whatever. And then, you know, before you know it, someone will stop by and say hi or whatever. And then you're, I don't know, or you meet somebody on the trail and now all of a sudden you don't feel as outside. And then, yeah, come back a few more times and you're just one of the community. Everybody forgets how long ago or how recently you joined. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
They forgot you're a newbie.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, until they see me riding. And they're just like, oh, yeah, that guy.
Like, oh, yeah, that guy. Who invited him? No.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's going to sound weird. Like, I don't even know if I've let my wife unload her bike. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've just done it like a good minion. But I don't know if I'm, like, getting in the way of something. Because there's a... Yeah.
This actually brings up a really good thing because you're doing it to help be helpful and you're doing it to help her out. But really you're almost hindering her.
Yeah.
To be honest. And like my ex-boyfriend who I used to ride with, he would do everything for me too, like unload, load, change the oil. Like, so I didn't have to, which was great. And when you're new, just not having that, like just riding is stressful and hard enough. Like just learning how to ride is hard enough. So having someone take the pressure off with the loading and unloading and changing the oil and maintenance is wonderful. There comes a point where you need to step back for sure. And, just let be there too if she needs a hand, obviously, but let her do it. And then, like, before you know it, she'll be riding without you all the time and you'll be like, what the heck?
She's done it a few times, but we can get to a spot from our house to go riding. So she's gone off about a dozen times on her own. And she jonesed to go riding and stuff like that. So pretty stoked. Because I didn't see that coming. In the beginning, I thought she was just, like, riding to make me happy, you know? Like... just with, okay, I'll go, geez. But then she, I don't know, caught the bug and she's like, when are we going to go?
That's so awesome. And like, it's great that you, yeah, she started maybe because of you, but like it turned into a passion of hers too, which is so cool. And I guess it's like a whole nother issue, but like, it is hard. I grew up in a like pretty traditional home. Like, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, like farm wife, raised four kids, like super busy. I don't at all look down on anybody who chooses to do that, but it's just not the gender roles that you grow up seeing necessarily, that the woman is independent and doing like manly things like changing oil and maintaining a bike and riding a bike even, right? So it's just a bit of a mindset thing for sure. And obviously I've like really gone the other way with the more male dominated job and also the sports. But I guess I kind of, once I opened my mind to realizing like I can do anything I want, I just have to learn. It's actually not that hard to learn these things. I just got to do it. It kind of like, I kind of like blew my own mind and like ran with it. And then I started doing everything I ever wanted to do. Right?
That's awesome.
So
Well, you have to recognize like basically in the trade that you're in, when you look around, most of the guys that are doing their jobs, they're not even, there's really nothing remarkable about any of them. They just show up like.
Absolutely not. And that's like the crazy thing. Cause you like look up to someone and you're like, wow, they're amazing. They do this. They're just another human. There's really no difference between you and them. Like you're just as capable or more.
Yeah. I mean, the way I put it there is probably a bit of a backhanded compliment to the guys. Like it's just, we just do the job, right? Like,
yeah.
And motorcycle riding, the hardest part about it is riding it. The maintenance is pretty straightforward. Get a socket, take the nut off of the oil, let the oil stop coming out, replace the nut, fill the oil to the amount.
It's such a basic concept, but when it's something you've never done, it's overwhelming, right?
Oh yeah, am I doing it right?
Yeah, because then like, and especially women overanalyze everything and overthink everything. So we're like, oh well, was that right? Was that too much oil? Was that too little oil? Like, you know, you just overthink it. Oh, is my bike going to blow up tomorrow?
Well, use a measuring cup, check your manual.
Exactly. And I do find like women are really good at that. Like they will do it like to the manual, to a T.
Yeah.
And guys, oh, I'm pretty sure that's good. I think that's the right oil. Like, and we're like, no, I'm calling my dealer to make sure this is right.
Yeah, man. A lot of the fellows are soul surfers when it comes to being mechanics. It's just like, good enough. And guys have clapped out bikes. So lady ridden is a sales bonus for a reason. Like, I mean, there are women that have the original oil in their bike.
Lady ridden, it can be a good thing or a very bad thing. It depends on the person.
Same thing for guys, though. You went from the CRF 230, or well, from an 85 to the 230. You made a comment as if the 230 was like your little tractor. It got you around. So it must have been really confidence building to ride the 230, having sort of all mountain access.
Yeah, no, it was, because I could pretty much go anywhere with it. And it made up for my lack of skill, where it would just tractor me up stuff. And I was like, oh, like it was a confidence booster, because I'm like, oh, I made it, even though I probably shouldn't have made it because it wasn't my skill that got me there. But it was a confidence booster, and I like had a blast learning to ride on it. It is a heavier bike. So then once I started to ride the bike and it stopped riding me, I realized like it was heavy, and I would literally look at a pebble hit it and fall over. So I got pretty exhausted lifting this bike up 100 times a day, but I got strong because of it. But yeah, I rode that for a couple seasons, and it was a great learning tool for sure. And then I moved on to a KTM Freeride 252 stroke. That was awesome, an awesome bike. I love that thing. Like, it's still a full-size bike, but it's a cross between a trials bike and a dirt bike, so it's very light, very nimble, and lots of low-end power, which was like good for learning obstacles. And like a full-size bike, but not too overwhelming and too scary. Like, I was really happy with that decision. It was, and it's such a light bike. Like, you could just like pick it up, and yeah, it was awesome.
The smile on your face about how easy it is to pick up. Like, because I guess the 230 is like 240 pounds.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know what the Freeride weighs, but I think it has a lower center of gravity as well, so it's easier.
Yeah, like I recommend that to any bike. Honestly, even as someone's first bike, I recommend that bike now. Like, I love it. And they don't make them. I don't think they make them anymore. So they're hard to find, and they hold their value, which is sweet if you want to ride it for a year or two to learn and resell it. So, and yeah, now this is going to be my second season on Husky TE300i. So love that upgrade. I love the Freeride, but I definitely needed more top end power. It definitely lacks the top end stuff. So very happy with the 300. I was nervous going to 300 because I kind of had like the stereotype in my head that it was like a man's bike. Like, it was it's a big bike, right? Man's bike, lots of power, but it's very forgiving. Like, it's, it almost does tractor a little bit, like on the low end, and it's really fun to ride. Been very happy with it. So
yeah, it went from, CRF 250X to the TE 300, and,
nice.
I'm still struggling, with hill climbs that have no run up, because on my 250, I could do that. Like, I could stop on a 45 degree hill, start and keep going. But on the TE, it doesn't do that. So I need a little run up, or I need to just work on my clutching a bit differently. Stroke versus two stroke, it's just a different power delivery to the back wheel.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, but oh well, it's a fun bike. I like mine.
Yeah, and I do agree with like the clutching thing. I could get away with not clutching as much on the Freeride, and definitely have to do some more clutching on the 300. But that's not a bad thing. That's just, I was just a lazy habit from before, and this is definitely a good change. Oh,
yeah. It's not a knock on the bike; it's a knock on me. I'm so used to tractoring up or lugging up. Even first, second gear, there'd be like a certain sound, like an RPM range that I could just get audibly. And then I would sit there the whole way up, you know, just maintain it with the clutch or whatever. But on the two stroke, it seems like when I get to that lower baritone sound, I've got to feather the clutch more and just sort of load the flywheel and just launch, do like these little leaps.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime I have a run up though, I'm just in the right spot as I hit the hip face and then just get right up the top. So that's not a big deal, other than if I end up with my feet off the pegs or something like that, then I'm fucked. So if you were to give advice to a woman rider who was just thinking about getting started, doesn't have a bike, doesn't have anything, same path, the 85 to the 230 to the Freeride to the 300, or would you rearrange the pieces of the puzzle a little bit differently?
Definitely skip that 85. It was kicking around, is the only reason why that's what I first learned to ride on. But yeah, skip the 85. I think I'd still recommend the 230, because it's a little like less peppy for someone who has zero experience with bikes. 230, it's not peppy at all, so it feels a little safer for people. But if you've been around bikes a little bit and you want something a little more fun, I'd say that Freeride, I'd highly recommend that bike. Like, that's such a great beginner's bike for sure. Either one, really, they can't go wrong. They're both a good size too for women, a bit smaller but still full size. So
have you had a chance to try the Freeride electric bike?
I have not, but that would be sweet for like around town or something.
I know it looks very motocross, so I feel like trouble would be on the horizon pretty fast. Like, but
I think so.
Yeah, I wonder if he needs to be insured or any of that stuff.
I know nothing about them. I don't even know anyone that owns one personally, so I don't know much about them. But
I feel they aren't very handy where we are. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we're not in the same area, you and I, but we're in the same kind of country, mm-hmm. and I feel like the range. Like range anxiety and then charging the bike out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that part makes me nervous for sure. Because I think you kind of do the same style of riding, more like long distance stuff. Like it's like when I go riding, it's like a full day thing, right? Full day trek. So yeah, you do definitely range is a concern for sure.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I don't know. Because like the torque and the way you can sort of like tailor the behavior of an electric bike to your needs. It's very, I don't know, appetizing, but range mm-hmm. anxiety, is a no-go and refilling, you know, like with a gas bike, you do your 80 kilometers, you know, whatever full tank of gas gets you. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you just refill and you can go do it again. Not that anybody would do that, like two tanks of gas in a day, but you could if you decide. Yeah. But I think that the range on the e-bikes isn't anywhere near that. So
it would be great if you do a lot of riding like at an enduro track or something. Like it'd be perfect for that.
Yeah, yeah. Like at Wild Rose at the Red Bull sort of Rocks and Logs arena there. So what are your plans for 2021 then? Just work on all the great weekends and then ride on the other ones?
Yeah, I pretty much hit every race I can.
Yeah.
And then but definitely focus on adventure riding and just improving my skills on fun rides, and riding with people who are better than me is definitely key for that. I find myself when I love taking newer people out. I love showing them what they're capable of and showing them where they're capable of going. But I find I can get kind of lazy when I'm riding with newer people. So riding with people who are better than me definitely pushes me to keep up, like speed. I prefer technical riding over fast riding. So riding with fast people is good for me because it pushes me. And ride as much as I can. Like I said, it's tough when you have a life and work and a wedding and whatnot, but definitely get as much as I can in. So
have you given any thought to like the traditional phasing of like the dating, the engagement, the wedding, and then like usually what happens right after that?
I don't know what you're talking about. That's definitely in our future. When we'll see. We're really enjoying what's going on right now in our lives, so we'll see. Definitely in the future. I'd love to teach little ones to rip as well, so
it's more frustrating than it is rewarding from ages 3 to 6, but then it starts to become a lot of fun.
I feel like it'd be a lot of work, but then I look back at like the childhood I would have loved, like as a motorsports enthusiast, the childhood I would have loved to have. Hopefully I can give that to a little guy or a little girl. And it'd be pretty cool to see the progress. I'm sure it's not all like sunshine and roses, like you say, but it'd be pretty cool.
Oh, sometimes it's like 2 hours of like loading up and getting there and getting set up for like 6 minutes of riding, and then that's that.
Like, man, I need different riding buddies.
Yeah, that's right. And then it's painful, like you never have to change your oil because your bike never gets out of idle.
That's true. Yeah, I guess you get good at clutching though.
Hell yes you do. Well, I got a Recluse on mine. I don't even have to bother anymore. Just sit there. Yeah, I suggest that for all parents.
That's actually a really good point. Good call.
Oh, because you have to throw your bike down like for emergencies all the time. Kids seem to find a way to get their head right near the spinning back wheel or whatever. So you're just like, just get off and rescue.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a thing. But yeah, if I was to give advice, I would just, you know, not pull a goalie anytime soon. Just make sure you Got all your writing done.
Get all because, my things I want to do out the way first, because I'm sure what like your writing goals are out the window at that point.
Yeah, well, just for a short time.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm sure you can get back to it. Like you could probably ride for half of the pregnancy, and then you'd be back on like right away after. You know, if you want.
Like people ask all the time, like, "Oh, would you? You probably can't ride for like a year," and I'm like, "Yeah, I can." Like.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. Totally.
You just can't ride together. You know, that's the thing. Someone's got to sit on the sideline while the other person gets to ride for a
bit.
It's
totally doable. I mean, like, it depends on how much you want it and how much of you want it to make your lifestyle. Like, it's a huge part of our lifestyle now. And hopefully that doesn't, I mean, it's going to change obviously within reason, but
yeah.
Hopefully we can keep this lifestyle or a similar lifestyle going. So yeah. And like the goal, if it happens for us, is to, you know, incorporate that as a family thing. So
I'm just teasing you, giving you a hard time there.
One day. One day.
For him, nothing changes, right? Like for you, there's just like,
yeah, it's
all of a sudden.
Bullshit.
Yeah. That's the only time there's a real, real obvious difference between being a boy and a girl on a motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's definitely differences. That is one of them.
So if there's anyone you could ride with, who would you like to go or ride with?
Oh, that's a good question. Crystal Levesque, Crystal Loves Moto. We chat once in a while online, and been following her for a long time. She just like, I'd love to ride with her because she seems just like no BS, like just really chasing after her goals, and her like she won't slow down for anyone, just keep pushing, you know. And I would be really fun to ride with her, and very motivational. I think I'd love to, even though she's only one province over, she's pretty far away still, like 12 hours. So maybe it'll happen sometime. I'm honestly lucky to be surrounded by some pretty, pretty awesome riders out here, like Amber Guro and Courtney Schmally. Like we all live really close together, and I've access to riding with them all the time, which is sweet. They're a couple of really fast, awesome riders. So
have you been down to Kukanusa?
I have. Yeah. Last year, just once, actually last spring. Hadn't gotten a chance to go this spring because of work, story of my life, but, yeah, now we can pretty much ride here, so I'm not even going to bother. So.
Yeah. Where are you? Like, not exactly, but generally whereabouts are you in the province?
Red Deer area.
Okay. Oh yeah. So then, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Courtney's like in Sylvan Lake, and
yeah.
So you guys are all close.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all close. So like Rocky Mountain House, just an hour west. So, lots of riding out that way, which is sweet.
The community here is so small.
Mm-hmm.
It's just insane. Like everybody sort of is connected, at least one degree of separation by the most.
Yeah, I feel like all the riders from Central Alberta, like Red Deer, Rocky Mountain House to Calgary, like everyone's super connected and everyone rides together quite a bit, which is really cool. Like, and yeah, like an hour, we're all an hour and a half away from each other. But I mean, that's nothing to drive an hour or two to go for a ride. So.
Yeah, I think that's the minimum investment. Like,
yeah.
Everybody's about an hour, hour and a half away from some riding space.
Yeah.
And like, you know, where you are to where I am, we could meet at Fallen Timber, mm-hmm. and it'd be pretty much even drive.
Yeah.
Like I think that's why it always works out. Like everybody is willing to go about that distance to go spend another 8 hours.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it. Yep. Yeah, it'd be sweet to be able to ride from my backyard like you can, but I don't quite have that luxury, but that's all right.
Yeah, well, I think our window of opportunity is going to close within the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. While it's Crown land, there's a private development now separating our door to that space.
Yeah.
And once they get their go-ahead, the way to get there, well, I mean, we can just load up the truck, but then at that point, it's not going to be as easy and convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just end up going somewhere else. Or the truck will live with bikes in the back. Because just like, you know, what's the point of like unloading them into the garage just to push them back out?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I've got a couple other events hopefully happening this summer. Amber and I are looking at putting on a fun ride event this summer. So yeah, that'll be super fun. We'll do it out somewhere out by Rocky Mountain House somewhere. Just a way to get like, especially with the way the year has been with COVID and everybody misses people and events. So if we could do like a fun ride or something, I think we'd like to put something on like that in July. And then We've had our first annual Climb Women's Ride last year. So I know that Janae and Courtney are planning on doing that again for this year, second annual, and it was a huge hit last year. Got lots of girls out for that. So I think that'll be a go as well this year. So quite looking forward to that as well.
That's a big thing. Like, I don't know how, to connect the women, I guess. I don't know how to describe it, but like all the fellas have like a way, I don't know, like use Instagram or whatever, they're going to go for a ride and people sort of pile on. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if it's the same for women. Like, I know my wife would love to participate in something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know that she knows how to take part or find out or be in the know. Like,
yeah,
you know, the Second Gear Club and Rocky Mountain Dirt Riders and all those guys, they have like their events. And they're like, AMSA has like the whatever, the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there could be a Western Canadian women's riders page or something like that.
That's a great idea. There's a few ladies' pages on Facebook. Oh, I'd have to look up their names right now. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But that whenever there is like either a clinic or an event or just a group ride, some girls will post on there. And then on Instagram too, like a lot of like the riders will post about like the Climb Women's event. Like a lot of us will like post in our stories or advertise about it just to get the word out there for people like your wife who maybe aren't part of a group and happen to scroll through our story or something and see it. But yeah, it ends up kind of being a lot of like a word of mouth type of thing, right? So yeah, it's definitely can be negative, but it can be super positive too in connecting people. And if you start like following a rider you like they probably will share an event like that. And the nice thing about like the event Amber and I want to put on and the Climb Women's Ride, they're fun rides, they're adventure rides. So they're for people who are like not into racing or intimidated by racing or just have never done a race. These adventure rides can be a great way to meet other riders, because usually that's where you'd meet other riders, is at a race, especially with the race is not really happening with COVID. We figured like adventure rides are just such a great way to connect people and get new riding buddies, basically. So.
Yeah, that's how it happened for us. Like, we went to one race, and then after that, we're sort of like in the community. But the hard part is going to that first race, right?
Yeah.
Like, no. Oh yeah. How did you meet your fiance? Like, how did that happen?
Ah, yes, we met at a first aid course. Yeah, we were both there for work, and there was one seat left in the front row next to me. He showed up late, and he had to sit next to me, which he wasn't too mad about, apparently, hindsight. And he sat next to me, and we like kind of chatted throughout the day, but I was like deathly sick with a cold. So I had zero interest in talking to anybody, let alone him. And I was like, I'm so sick. Like, shouldn't even probably be here. Like, nowadays in COVID world, like, you would never go anywhere that sick. But back then we did. So, we chatted a bit, but nothing really happened that day. And then he messaged me on Facebook the next day. He's like, oh, I wish I asked you for your number yesterday. But we started chatting, and the rest is history, really.
And that makes me think of another thing. Like, you're sort of out there, you're pretty approachable online. Mm-hmm. So do you get like lots of weirdos in your DM?
It's yes and no. It's like, there's definitely the odd guy, but it's not that bad, because I feel like I don't portray myself in a sexual way. I really try not to. Like, I try to make it about the riding and not about me necessarily as much. And I feel like the more like selfies and pictures of your body you post, you're going to get more of that. I try to just post a lot about riding, because that's what it's about and that's what I love. And you definitely get the odd creeper, and there are some funny ones. I'll like screenshot them and put them on my stories, or like send them to Justin. I'm like, I don't know, this guy's pretty enticing. But it's easy enough that you can like block them, and like I honestly just don't engage. Like, delete and block. And yeah, it's I think it's like, even at work, like a lot of people are like I work currently away, and I stay in camp. a lot of people are like, oh, like that must be so bad. Like there must be so many creepy guys. And it's like, it's all about how you carry yourself and how you present yourself. I find like, yeah, there's definitely the odd guy who like doesn't take a hint and is super annoying and creepy, but it just comes down to like presenting yourself as someone like confident and in who you are, and not just like, you're not just your body kind of thing. And yeah, taking no shit too, like block, delete, take no shit.
In the workspace, I feel that like in construction or what have you, how you carry yourself really matters no matter your gender. Mm-hmm. Like if you behave like a shit rocket, people will treat you that way.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And it's like, if you know your purpose and are strong with that, I think that helps too. Like at work, my purpose is to make money. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And I am not there for any other reason, not to make friends. Like, yeah, definitely made friends at work, but I'm not there to make friends. Same with on Instagram. Like my purpose is to share about my adventures, to share about dirt biking and sledding, hopefully inspire others to, you know, do the same. And I think like I don't have like some secret hidden agenda to get like people to like comment on like my face or something. Like it's not about that at all, right?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. Be professional, get a professional result.
For the most part,
I guess.
There's always like idiot who's like gonna try, and you're like, really?
Yeah. But those idiots run a numbers game.
Yeah.
They just ask everybody, and
you're not.
They're used to rejection.
They're hitting on everybody.
Yeah, that's right. Do you have a heartbeat? Yes, yeah, sweet. Da, da, da. Exactly. Like, yeah. It's like they're as common as the jerk offs on Kijiji when you post something for sale, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'll give you half price."
Yeah, like
fuck off.
Fuck off, exactly. Like. Oh, it's the worst. I hate trying to sell stuff.
All right. Well, I feel I've taken up a lot of your time here. Is there anybody you want to like give a special shout out to?
Yeah, there's a few people. I'd like to thank Rainy Creek, their local dealer in Eckville, Alberta here. They've been awesome with both the sleds and dirt bikes, and they're a huge supporter of mine. Really grateful for them. And Climb's been very supportive as well with gear for summer and winter. I'm just like so lucky to work with a company who has both dirt bike and sled gear. That's been really cool.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, it's honestly perfect. And Mountain Lab Gear, they carry a lot of, like we were talking about like backcountry safety and stuff. They carry a lot of that kind of equipment. Great to check them out as well. And M7 Designs has done a super sick holographic wrap on my sled, which has been really awesome. So appreciate them a lot as well.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.